I used to be an adventurer like you, and I took an arrow in the knee.
Aloha, everybody. Welcome to episode number 13 of Troll Scroll, an Elder Scrolls Online podcast. It's great to see you guys. Thanks for coming to the show. We have sort of a big episode ahead of us. We had a huge announcement a couple days ago from an ex-Mythic employee, one of the founders, Mark Jacob, made a stunning, astounding sort of news release on this project that they're looking forward to work on. City State Entertainment, that's the name of their studios, right, Sophie?
That's right.
How you doing tonight, Sophie? How's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Can't complain. Can't complain. We're talking about MMOs.
We're talking about
much better than that, right?
Right, it doesn't. And we're talking about something close to Dark Age, so I'm just really excited.
You're going to go all fangirl on this podcast. Cool, though. That's cool. Glad to have you on the show. Tim A. LaPerriere, my fellow Michigander, love French guy. How you doing? Hey,
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Good. And Dan the Man isn't on the show tonight.
Oh.
He'll be returning next week. So in lieu of him, we have Ryan Barth, one of our writers at thetrollscroll.com. Ryan, how's it going, man? How you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. Happy to be here.
Yeah, how's the weather in Chicago right now?
It's not too bad. Actually, been a pretty mild winter, and it hasn't snowed that much, probably only about 6 or 7 times. So I think it was about 40 degrees today, so it wasn't too bad.
Nice. Good deal. Guys, let's jump into the show, right? Why not? Okay. Camelot Unchained. Sophie, lay it on us. What was this announcement?
Okay. Well, basically 2 days ago, in case you haven't noticed, something was announced by Mark Jacobs on his website, CityStateEntertainment.com. And he announced the release of Camelot Unchained. He even posted the third of his teaser video. And it's actually pretty exciting because it's almost, and I can't say it is Dark Age of Camelot 2, but it is very close to that. And I mean, so many people are really excited about it. It's going to be a three-realm game. It's going to be RVR focused. It's not going to be a game in which you're going to have RVR or PvP instance. It's all going to be like massive, like it is in Dark Age. It's going to be fully crafting based. It's not going to be PE grinding, gear grinding. You're going to be able to have a lot of choices apparently in the game. So I am just waiting for more information on that.
Yeah, let's talk about Mark Jacobs for a second. A little history. He was one of the co-founders of Mythic Entertainment, producers, developers of the first Dark Age of Camelot MMORPG that swept the PC gaming world by storm. The whole three factions fighting each other was huge innovation, especially in an MMORPG. Sophie, I think, would you say Dark Age of Camelot was one of the best PvP experiences you've ever had in an MMO?
It is the best PvP experience I've ever had in any MMO. And you see that coming out, like when they announced in Guild Wars 2 there was going to be three factions, it was a big deal for Dark Age players because we were waiting for a game, an MMO or something that had three factions. And now there's another one, and that was TSO, three factions. So all the Dark Age Camelot players, most of them, they were really expecting, and they still expect TSO because it has three factions. But now Camelot Unchained kind of brings a lot of Dark Age players, you know, oh, okay, we have another option that we can take. And it's just, I mean, oh my God.
Yeah.
You can see the excitement here.
You sound very excited.
Yeah, and there was some controversy in the later years with the game called Warhammer Online.
Ooh.
Wasn't very successful.
No.
Basically, Electronic Arts and Mythic Entertainment had a merge. Sort of controversial, especially since Mark Jacob ended up leaving the company. People don't know if he was laid off or if he left on his own. We're not going to take a stance. We don't know for sure. No one does, I don't think, except perhaps him and the EA executives. But would you say that he's sort of been hidden the past few years? He started this company, City State Entertainment, and I believe it's a video game company focused on sort of mobile app games that you could find on the app marketplace. But this is sort of a big deal. Camelot Unchained. What do you guys think? We have sort of this new game coming out, potentially, that inspired the RVR that we're going to see in the Elder Scrolls Online. What do you think the correlation or impact's going to be, Tim? Do you think this is bad for TESO?
Well, I definitely think it adds competition to TESO, but I don't think it's going to be that devastating. And the only reason, and Dark Age of Camelot fans, please don't hang me when I say this. Okay.
Sophie's in her Skype call, bro. Be careful.
I know. I'm not looking to start like a war here, but what I'm getting at is the original developers for Dark Age of Camelot now work at ZeniMax, or at least a majority of them do, or a good chunk of them do. Okay. And TESO has pretty much every single major aspect and more than what Dark Age of Camelot had. So they've got a publisher backing them. They've been in development for roughly 5 or 6 years. They've got a huge team, a major IP. They've got all the aspects of RVR, and they've got the experience behind it all. Now, when you look at the second game, Camelot Unchained, we see that they're advertising RVR, which is great. That's good. But I don't think it's enough. Just because TESO has RVR, it's got, I mean, we've seen what TESO's RVR is going to look like. Not in depth, but we've gotten a really good look at what, and when I say look, I mean a quick snippet. But we've got a quick snippet of what TESO's RVR is going to look like. And I personally think it looks phenomenal. In just the few short seconds that we've seen. And what they're bragging about with the mega server and having, you know, 2,000 people in Cyrodiil and 200 people on your screen fighting and yada, 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 yada. I mean, they're making all these promises. It sounds really good. Again, we haven't seen anything really from Camelot Unchained, so it's a little early to make, like, rash, you know, decisions here and comparisons and stuff like that. But I really don't think that Camelot Unchained has that much over TESO. It doesn't. I don't even think it has anything over TESO. I still think TESO is the bigger game in the end. So, you know, I hope that's not to say though that I seriously do, and I legitimately mean this. I hope Camelot Unchained does very well, because it's always good to have a competitor in the market, because that makes you want to, you know, outcompete. Okay, that makes you want to do better than your competitor, obviously. I mean, that's in any business, it's obviously better to be on top. And I really think that having a strong competitor in the market with you will, in turn, potentially make both games better. Because ZeniMax, you know, if Camelot Unchained has some sweet, like, aspects that ZeniMax doesn't have in TESO, perhaps they'll, you know, compensate for that. They'll kind of go along with the same idea. You know, WoW did that too. They took the best from a lot of games and they kind of put their own twist on it and put it into their game.
Sure.
And that's, you know, we got World of Warcraft. You know, it's a hybrid of a lot of games that came before it. I shouldn't say hybrid, but it's got a lot of games that came before it. It's influenced by a lot of games that came before it. So, you know, we could see them kind of doing that in, you know, Camelot Unchained and The Elder Scrolls Online. So,
Ryan, what's your take on this whole thing, Ryan? What's your stance?
I definitely was kind of, when you guys were talking about, thinking about some of the things Tim was saying. I don't think there's anything wrong with a little healthy competition. I mean, definitely anything to kind of keep Tesso on its toes. As far as if it's going to take some of the draw from the Elder Scrolls Online, I mean, it's a definite possibility. I got to tell you, I mean, a lot of my gaming buddies and stuff like that, though I never played Dark Ages of Camelot, when, you know, this was first announced and they heard who was involved in Tesso and everything, I mean, they were, you know, pretty psyched because of their experience with Dark Ages of Camelot and the three-faction PvP and all that. And that's what got a lot of these people who aren't even that familiar with the Elder Scrolls series really behind this game and really psyched about it and stuff like that. So I could see, I guess, a little bit of a split, though. I don't know. I mean, you know, ZeniMax, so many resources and like that seemingly like unstoppable IP. It's hard for me to imagine it personally. Now, again, I'm not a fan or haven't played Dark Ages of Camelot, so I can't really say, but it's hard for me to imagine like that kind of derailing the Elder Scrolls Online train. That being said, reading about Camelot Unchained does actually sound really interesting with like the basis on European myths and lore and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's hard to say. Will it really have an effect? I mean, if Tesso sucks, it will. So I don't know.
You know what I think? I think Camelot Unchained cannot really affect Tesso because we don't even know the release date. Say it's not even... probably not going to be in 2013. So is it going to be in 14 or even 15? So say it comes in 2 years from now on, after the beta, so I'm talking about the release. And Tesso will be, what, 2 years now? It's as if you compare right now, Guild Wars 2, is it going to hurt Aeon or in games that are 2 years old? It's a bit hard to kind of figure out how it's going to be like in that time. So I don't know. I guess we'll see.
You know, kind of also... sort of what she's saying is I kind of feel that every MMO right now has its niche market, its niche group of players that are like, well, this is the best thing out right now. And I don't really like it that much, but I mean, what else is there to do? You know, so it's almost like in a way, everything's becoming way too saturated. Like there's not that one game that everybody's going to be playing. Like I'm sure Elder Scrolls Online will come out, you know, millions of people are going to play it, and then those millions, you know, a few hundred thousand are going to go play Dark Ages Camelot, or sorry, Camelot Unchained, and then, you know, those weirdos are just going to go back and play EVE Online and stuff like that. So it's almost like there's just too much to choose from, and it kind of worries me because, like these days with MMOs, it's basically everybody's MMO hopping. Like, what's the next big MMO? Like, are we going to be sitting here, you know, in a year and a half, 2 years from now, and being like, oh, well, Dark Ages Unchained's coming out. Let's go sign up for beta. You know, that kind of thing. It does worry me. I just want to find a home is really what I'm saying. I just want Tesso or Tiso, I don't know, tomato, tomato, Chicago thing maybe.
But Ryan's MMO homeless.
I mean, poor guy. Like where I'm at right now. I'm enjoying myself, but I just want to find the one, you know, sure. Like my wife.
That's a good comparison. Yeah. That's a good comparison.
Right. And a lot of people feel like that, that you encounter in games. They're like, yeah, this is okay, but yeah. I just wish it was like, you know, Vanilla WoW or something like that, you know, where it felt like you can't even imagine yourself playing anything else.
I know. This is why I'm so excited about Camelot Unchained, because you talk about home. I started playing Dark Age of Camelot 12 years ago, and I've never quit. I've been having my account up for 12
Wait,
years.
Wait, are you still playing Dayak?
Yes, I'm still playing Dark Age.
Wow.
So when you say it's your home, and I'm like, this is like, I don't know how many times you hear over the years, please Dark Age 2, Dark Age 2, we want to have Dark Age of Camelot 2. Now, this is not called Dark Age 2, but it is, you know, like I said earlier, that's pretty much close to it.
It's basically Dark Age, right.
So we're like, hey, you know.
Yeah, going back to what was said about the resources, when you compare the two companies, ZeniMax Online has a tremendous advantage. I think this aren't they asking they need at least $5 million on Kickstarter to even launch the game? They're aiming for $10 million, but they need at least $5 million to launch the game. And then their development studio, to my knowledge, is currently made up of 14 people, including Mark Jacobs, who, is he even developing in the game? I don't think he is, like, a developer. I think he's just, like, heading the project and stuff. But then you compare that to the ZeniMax Online Studios, which has over 100 employees, and it's like, oh, man. Do you think Camelot Unchained is basically going to be an indie game, sort of? I mean, technically it's an indie game, right? There's no big publisher behind it currently, like, you know, ZeniMax Online has, ZeniMax Media and Bethesda. So, doesn't that sort of put them at a disadvantage just by the lack of resources?
Yeah, I mean, good gameplay doesn't come necessarily from cash. I mean, let's look at Tor. We always rag on Tor here, but Tor had an extremely high budget. We don't know what the actual budget was. People said $300 million. That was shot down. It wasn't $300 million, but it was definitely way more expensive than your average MMO. It also has it had a huge IP, arguably one of the largest, if not the largest IP in the world, and it had an extremely large fan base. Yet Tor still did bad. So resources, IP, and fans alone still aren't enough to keep a game afloat. It has to have good gameplay. So if these 14 guys can come up with a way to make their game fun enough and most, you know, enjoyable for most players, I think we could potentially see a good competitor for TESOL. You know, if these guys do everything right, ZeniMax does everything wrong, God forbid, but if they do everything wrong, we might see more people playing Camelot Unchained in the long run. I mean, initially, I really doubt it. I really do doubt it. But, you know, who knows? I'm just hoping that ZeniMax gets everything right. They seem like they know what they're doing. They have the experience. They know what, you know, they know what worked for Dayok. They know what didn't work for Warhammer. They know what didn't work for previous MMOs. They've got a good idea down with RVR and stuff like that. I just hope that they can pull it off.
Yeah, and Sophie, I just had a question. Is there anything that we know? You play Dark Age of Camelot. Is there anything that we know of in the Elder Scrolls Online RVR that isn't including a specific element from the Dark Age of Camelot RVR system?
Well, just a skill-based system, like the way you level itself. Like in any other schools, and that's the case probably in TESOL, the more you do a skill, the more it goes up. Now, it's not the case in Dark Age. It's all level-based, so you level up, and then you go to your trainer, and then you skill up. That's one thing.
So you could actually level up by doing the RVR? Like,
yeah.
Okay. So you didn't just have to do PvE content?
Well, yeah, because there's different kind of battlegrounds in Dark Age where it's divided, you know, per level. So you have the, like, 20 to 29, or you have, like, 20, whatever. And then when you're, the hand game is the level 50, you know, we'll call it New Frontiers. So it will, all the level 50 go in RVR. It's a big major zone. There's no instance there, right? So everybody's in there. But you don't go, you can see people level 20. They can go in it, but they're not going to be leveled up, like in Guild Wars, you know, Guild Wars 2, go into the PvP, your max level. It's not the case in Dark Age. You go level 20, well, you're level 20 in there.
So you don't get bolstered, basically.
No.
Okay.
No.
Interesting. Well, it sounds to me like TESOL has everything that the original Dark Age of Camelot is offering, which, more power to TESOL. If they offer everything the original Dark Age of Camelot has, plus they have the Elder Scrolls IP and a ton of other stuff, Camelot Unchained is going to have to really figure something out wild and new to innovate RVR even further. But interesting convo, guys. Interesting convo. We'll have to see how that works out. But in the future, like Tim and Ryan, like you both said, you know, in years to come, when both games are out, that's going to be awesome competition-wise if they're innovating off of each other and competing off of each other. More power to the players. So, that's great. Moving right along, something interesting found. If you go to theelderscrollsonline.com and click on support, and I believe you click on, I think you click on support and it brings you up to the page. Let me see here. Let me see if I can pull it up for you guys.
Support email.
Support email. We have something interesting here. There's a button. It says accounts /billing drop down menu. It says CD key, login issues, update billing information, payment assistance, other. Now, okay. How should I say this? I'm speculating here. Could this mean that TISA was going to be subscription-based? Or is it just account and billing that can be used for microtransactions? I mean, there has to be something here. It says update billing information, right?
Right. I mean, obviously they're going to be expecting some kind of payment, whether it's through microtransactions or simply buying the game off of their website. I would hope they're expecting payment. But whether or not it's microtransactions, simply buying the game off the website, or, in fact, a subscription model, we don't know. I hope that it's a subscription model, and I think it looks... I would say it's a good first clue, but it's nothing but speculation at this point.
Well, based on the MMOs that Mark Jacobs did, like Dark Age, Warhammer Online, I don't think Warhammer is free-to-play. It's still subscription-based, and it's still working that way. Dark Age is still subscription-based. I think you might start that way, and eventually, if they go free-to-play, then you'll go monetized, but I guess this is another... We'll see.
I seriously think right now, nowadays, some MMORPGs are starting up, like, they start off with a subscription business model, but I think they actually plan that after so many months, we're going to switch to free-to-play because they expect a downturn.
They plan for one, yeah. Or they get one in the works. I mean, Tor did it. Unfortunately, Tor did it, like, 8 or 9 months after release, which, you know, that's unfortunate. But, you know, if they do go free-to-play, I hope it's set up like Tor's, where you can just pay for the whole game and don't have to look back. It's like it was a, you know, pay-to-play game. Or, if you really want to, you could do sort of the free-to-play.
Well, let's just hope that they don't do freemium.
I just hope that they don't have to do that. I mean, overall, I just hope they don't have to do it, period.
One thing you have to take into consideration into PvP games, like really RVR focus, just like Dark Age, what can you monetize in these games other than, you know, free race change or something that, you know, class change, or what do you pay? Like, the game is not gear-based. You don't have to grind for gear. It's pretty easy to get. So it's hard to kind of figure out what can you buy in these games.
Cosmetic?
Yeah, I mean, that was the first thing that came to mind. I mean, if you throw a Nord helmet that looks awesome up there, I will pay $10 for it. I mean, that's just how I am, you know, and especially like you guys were saying about SWTOR, I personally feel that Elder Scrolls should come out with that similar business model.
Freemium, really?
Just because, like, I have high hopes for this game, and it's like my baby. I really want it to succeed. And look, they've got my money. They've got your guys' money. They've got so many people's money already. If they could even do like a month early access, like if you buy, you know, I don't know, 3 months of subscription, you do like a sub-based model and then a preferred player-based model, and then you have this sort of online shop where people can buy, like, you know, different mounts or different customizations, different armor skins, stuff like that. I mean, this isn't, you know... This is a big IP, and it's a recognizable lore, and it has recognizable armor sets and all sorts of weapons and stuff. People pay big money for that type of stuff. I mean, I'm not saying like $500, but the reason I feel that it needs to go that route is because I want the game to succeed, and I want it to succeed early on so there's not a drought in content or, you know...
Right, like there was with Tor.
Right, exactly. And, you know, again, like, to use the Old Republic as an example, it was kind of like, I always picture, like, a room of a bunch of guys being like, well, this game is awesome. Why isn't anybody playing it? And then, you know, like, kind of like these new guys come in and be like, you guys are just out of your mind, you know, and we're losing all this stuff. Let's do this and all these drastic changes. And now, since the since they implemented free to play, people are coming back. They're making money hand over fist with their in-game currency. I mean, people are still playing LOTRO. I mean, I just personally feel that this is kind of where MMOs are right now. And it's a dog-eat-dog world, and I just want Elder Scrolls to succeed.
The thing is, and I know this is kind of getting off topic here, but Tor could have succeeded with the $15 a month subscription fee had they just had the endgame content. It wasn't the subscription fee that killed Tor. It was the fact that people were paying for a game that was incomplete, and they felt that they got ripped off when they got to endgame. So as long as the Elder Scrolls has content for people to play, and RVR is that endgame content, and hopefully they add minigames. I mean, I've talked about minigames so many times in my experience with talking about MMOs that it's stupid, but minigames are huge. I don't understand why developers don't see minigames as a big thing. Minigames are absolutely huge. And if they have that endgame content, they're going to have people that are going to stick around and want to continue to play the game. And they could succeed with a monthly subscription.
Well, Tim, I want to sort of... Guys, we're going to sort of take a short transition into mail time, because we got a question from Jordan at Real Troll Scroll. Why do you think the Imperial City and other content like NPC guilds won't be in the game at launch? And I think the reason why is because ZeniMax Online is strategically putting in their content to keep players hooked after the first few months that the game releases.
Right? And you know what? Is that why? I mean, that's a good idea, right? People get in, they play RVR. I mean, it's going to be a huge thing, right? People are going to absolutely love it. They're going to be addicted to it. They're going to be playing it for, you know, easily 2-3 months with no complaints. Okay? Potentially. Then after those months end, right, after about 2-2.5 months maybe, they toss in the Imperial City. It's had a little bit more polish, so it's not as buggy, and now people are like, we can sack the Imperial City. This is freaking awesome.
That's going to be huge.
RVR is even
too
bigger, and that's going to make the RVR and the endgame content last even longer. And then same with the guilds. And while they're slowly implementing this stuff, because, mind you, I mean, most of this stuff is probably already done, the major parts of it, at least, while that stuff is being implemented into the game, ZeniMax has got a team, or a good chunk of their team, working on new content that they haven't even talked about yet. So this way, when we've burned through all the stuff that they've already announced, you know, like the guilds and the Imperial City and so on and so forth, now we have new content to come out after that. So they just keep players hooked. And honestly, I think that's a really smart move on their part.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And Ryan, I would love to see like a cosmetic market, but I do not want to see the free-to-play motto. If the Elder Scrolls Online, I don't know, if they do go free-to-play, I don't want to see them do the free-to-play motto Tor has, where you only have so many war zones you could do a week. You could do so many small flashpoints a week. Like, I feel like that rubs the player community the wrong way, and it almost forces the player to purchase the subscription to get the total awesome epic experience you want to get out of that game.
It sounds rap, but I mean, that's the idea though, right? They give you enough to tease you. I mean, it's, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that I agree with the whole concept, but it's like a demo. They give you a demo, they tease you, they whet your appetite, and then you're like, I need more. So you have two options. You can either buy the Warzone pack or whatever so that you can like do all the war zones with no problems, and you can just solely build your account as a PvP account so that you can just PvP all the time, or you can pay the $15 a month. I mean, you're basically getting, I mean, again, this game costs tons of money, right? You're getting your money, or they're letting you play this game that costs all this money, all this money for free. And they're enticing you to play to get more content, or you're playing and you want to get more content, right? So you pay the $15 a month, you get the full game.
Understand.
It's rat.
Understand.
It's rat, but
it's just bad business idea, though. Like, I don't know. It rubs the MMO community the wrong way.
Well, when I think about this, like, I don't necessarily think about the MMO community. I think about the people that aren't playing MMOs that are going to be coming to the Elder Scrolls. And those are the people I worry about, the Elder Scrolls Online, sorry. Like, I worry about the dude that's got the Xbox Live subscription and is playing Black Ops 2 right now that loved Skyrim. And then it's going to be like, oh, dude, what the heck? I got to pay $60 for 6 months, you know, or something like that. And I don't necessarily want them to base the restrictions that the Old Republic had are just, you know, they were ridiculous and, you know, turned a lot of people off.
Yeah, didn't you have to pay for more inventory slots? Like, you only had one row of inventory slots?
I think it was a little more than that, but yeah, some of the restrictions were ridiculous, but then, like, the SWTOR apologists would say, well, you're basically playing the entire game for free, and a lot of the restrictions actually were... Like, if you were there at launch, that's basically how you started off as free-to-play. Like, you couldn't sprint till level 15 or, you know, whatever. You couldn't buy a mount until level 25, that type of stuff. But, again, I had a point, and now it's gone.
You were talking about Skyrim console players.
Oh, right, yeah. You know, those are the Elder Scrolls IP is, you know, again, you know, the parallels between a Star Wars IP and that, I mean, that's why I get scared because, you know, it's things like, how could this game possibly fail when you think about everything that you've heard and everything we know thus far and the people that are involved in this game and the time that they seem to take. And then, you know, I just feel that a sub-based model could really make or break the game because you've got a lot of these people that are going to be new to this sort of game coming in just because, you know, their buddy left Skyrim at their apartment or something like that. So, I mean, I definitely think it can succeed on a purely sub-based model. Personally, I would love a subscription-based model because that kind of, keeps the community more... I don't know what a
good word. It incentivizes the players that are paying to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you were saying, as long as they release a semi, you know, steady stream of content, you know, every 3 months, 4 months, whatever, then the game can absolutely thrive as a subscription-based game. But again, who knows?
That's a great point, though. It all depends on what their target audience is. Are they looking for the niche MMO market? I don't think so, because they've been saying in interview after interview, we want it to be familiar to console players. We wanted to play like some of the console games and certain aspects, the way combat works and how you have so few action or so few spells and abilities on your action bars and you don't even have more than one action bar. Like, they want it to be very, I guess they want people that play the console to come to this game and feel like they already know how to play. And that's a great point. That's scary because who is going to pay from a console player? Like, I don't see console players paying $15 a month if that is their business model.
You know, it just all depends on how fun the game is. You know, if the game really is that much fun, then people will pay, regardless. I really do believe that. If the game is fun enough, whether you're new to MMOs or not, you'll come to understand and play and pay. I mean, think about it. Everybody started off new to MMOs at some point, and I remember when I started off in MMOs and I thought the idea of paying monthly was dumb. But then once I got into it and I understood it, I got the idea, you know, I'm paying for more content in the future. I don't get that same thing with Skyrim. Yeah, we're still getting content from Skyrim. Skyrim came out 2 years ago. However, we're not getting nearly the same amount of content that we'll get in TESO. Skyrim came out, like, what, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago? We've only gotten two expansion packs and then an add-on, which was Hearthfire. Because Hearthfire is not really considered an expansion pack. That same amount of time for T-Cell, we would have gotten so much more. So much more.
Hopefully.
And we probably right. Well, I'm hoping. I mean, one can assume.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's I really do think that once people get into it, the new people that are new to MMOs, once they get into it and they see, you know, where their money's actually going and stuff, I don't think it'll be too big of a problem.
Interesting. Interesting, guys. We'll have to see. Do you guys feel like the majority of my friends, especially the ones that aren't as much of a gamer as I am, they have consoles and they play like the big mainstream games. They play Call of Duty, and then they played Skyrim when it came out because it was a big deal when it came out. But I feel like a lot of those friends don't have a gaming machine, PC or Mac wise, that could really play TESO efficiently, especially when it comes to the possible, you know, high performance that it's going to demand in Cyrodiil. So I hope that's not an issue too. Like, I hope ZeniMax Online is really trying to optimize their game engine so that lower performance machines can play this, because I have a lot of friends that depend on their console to be like their main gaming platform.
Right.
But yeah, good deal, guys. Good deal. That was our mail time question from at Oakley Maui. Funny, very, very relevant to the conversation we just had. I hope that is their intentions. Do you guys think that's really their intentions? Is they're releasing that content later to sparsely give out content? Not sparsely, but sort of intelligently release content to keep people hooked into the game post-launch? Or do you think they're just doing that because it's not ready?
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, I really do think that they're doing it from a strategic standpoint in order to give themselves enough time to develop further content. Because we already know what that content is. We're already expecting it. We're going to have fun with the stuff that we have currently, and then it'll keep us hooked and give them time to make more. So, yeah.
Okay. Good deal. Ryan, let's talk about your article you wrote, the Guild issue. I know a lot of people were asking, what's your stance on multi-guilding? So I thought we would give you a moment to address your stance to our listeners, to our viewers. What's your stance on multi-guilding? And follow up to that article as well.
That's a good question. You know, when I originally talked to you guys, not that long ago, but it was years ago. No, I actually was pretty psyched about it. Like, I was like, oh, cool, multiple guilds. I could be in this guild and PvP, but then I got my PvE guild. And then, like, the more and more, like, especially, like, as I was writing that article, I kept, like, you know, I had my outline or whatever, and then, like, there was this big chunk that said, like, multiple guilds with, you know, a bunch of bullet points and stuff. And, you know, I kind of replied to somebody who commented, and I was like, it really could be an article on its own. I am pretty much up in the air. I'm starting to feel pretty negative toward it, actually. Because, like, say in Guild Wars 2 example, you could be in multiple guilds. And I didn't even know that, like, when I logged into the game. And a bunch of people would always log off, or like, you know, the way it looked, they went offline and they came back. It was like, where'd you guys go? They're like, we went to our other guild. I'm like, what do you mean your other guild, you traitors? And they're like, you could join multiple guilds. I'm like, oh, well, that's cool. And I never did it anyways. So, I mean, I see where it could be cool, but, you know, not to sound like too much of a nerd, though, I mean, we are on like a MMO podcast, so I guess it's okay.
Oh, we are nerds.
Right.
We are nerds.
You know, there's a certain amount of like unity, and I
that's
guess
not nerdish. That's just
pride. Like, if you're in a guild, like, you know, most of the time, a lot of these guilds have been around for at least, you know, a couple years, and you've been playing with these same guys. And to have that guy go off and join, you know, whatever guild, I would personally be a little hurt.
So, guild drama.
Right. And what if they start selling secrets and, you know, spies?
Pain in the butt. It's exactly like what you said. I mean, it's a perfect example. When they logged off and then they came back and you're like, where did you go? And they're like, oh, we were playing this entire time, but we were with our other guild. And you're like, dude, why weren't you playing with our guild? You were on the last 5 hours? You know what we did in the last 5 hours? Oh, sorry, we were doing this with our other guild. It's like, I just think that's completely dumb, in my opinion. I just think it's dumb.
That's what I mean. The more and more I think about it, like, initially that sounds great. Like, it's like, oh, cool. Like, I could go make friends other places. It's like, why? Why do I need to join another guild? Why can't I just do all these things in the guild I'm in? Why do I need to go join another one? I don't know.
And and here's the thing. If people that argue, well, if you join a PvP guild and you want a PvE and your guild doesn't PvE, well, then maybe that's not the guild for you. Go find a guild that does both PvP and PvE then. Oh, but they're the top PvPers in the world. Okay. Well, then compromise.
Right. Compromise. And then the multiple guild thing is already leading to just really weird stuff, like, you know, people already contacting, you know, your guild and be like, we're looking for all the GMs for this particular realm to join us in the conquering of Cyrodiil. It's like, okay, dude, I gotta take
We're gonna make a guild of guilds.
Right, a guild of guilds. Like, yeah, that sounds like it's gonna be great.
Isn't that the whole point of the alliance?
Right. Yeah.
So that's the whole point of the alliance system. I mean, Sophie, there was an alliance system in Dark Age of Camelot, right?
Right.
And there was one in Warhammer Online. I'm sure they're going to have one in TESO.
They're fun. They're awesome.
God. What? I don't understand. And now apparently, according to that last MMORPG.com interview, you might even be able to change your alliance, which is like WTF.
Wait.
Yeah.
What?
You're like, when he says alliance, he's talking about the faction. You could have a guild that has different factions.
Yeah, right. I don't know if you saw it. In the video interview, Paul Sage was asked by William Murphy to just reiterate to the community that players within their faction won't be able to switch to other factions with guilds and such. And Paul Sage had a pretty crazy response that was like, I don't know. We'll have to see. Yeah, that might not necessarily be true.
Okay, yeah. I just don't want people
to... Why the hell would you even pick a faction then? It's like...
Yeah, that's not confirmed, so don't like...
It's not confirmed, but
right.
It's like...
It's funny that it was left.
It was on the internet. It's true.
You're right.
I mean, we can't just toss it, though. Like,
right. No, I'm not saying that we toss it. I just don't want people to think that, oh, you guys said that it's confirmed, and it's clearly... No, it's not confirmed. But the fact that he left it open-ended like that... And if it wasn't, like, if we weren't able to do that, then why would he leave it open-ended? Just, right. I don't think he just, you know, enjoys toying with people on the internet. I mean, that's kind of sick if you think about it. He's trying to sell a product here, and he's just like, I don't know what's going on in this game. Like, it's just kind of weird, so.
It's treacherous, man. That is treacherous. I have no idea what's going on.
I hope he was drunk or something, because that's, I hope that doesn't happen.
I really hope that doesn't happen, too. I mean, even if it does happen, our guild's still going to come up with a policy to, like, you can't.
Well, it doesn't matter. You have to be a high elf to get in our guild anyway, so it's not like some dark elf's going to come up or some wood elf, and, I mean, wood elves right here.
Do you think that maybe they're doing that to... Like, that, in my opinion, that's something that would have been really cool in Star Wars The Old Republic.
Well, yeah, and Tor actually would have made sense.
Oh, absolutely.
You
it
know
would
what
have
I mean?
Great feature in Tor.
Right. Because, like, say you you level your Jedi all the way up to 50, but you make dark side choices. I mean, that makes sense, like, to switch factions. Like,
right.
And I guess in a way it could in, you know, The Elder Scrolls too, but I don't know.
I don't think it fits as well with the story as much as it would for Tor. You know, like, you see the movies and books and comics and video games where, you know, you switch to the dark side, or Sith gets redeemed to the light. I mean, it fits very well in Star Wars, and, you know, that was a concept that they tossed around in early development of the game, if you'd be able to do that or not. But in TESO, you know, from a gameplay standpoint, I really hope that they don't do that, just because it's, like, it would get confusing. In my opinion, like, you see a bunch of orcs Like, hypothetically speaking, what if there is an orc-only guild, okay? And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, let's be Altmeri Dominion now. Or let's go, you know, join up with a bunch of Altmeri Dominion guilds and let's be a part of their guild system and whatnot. And now all of a sudden we're rolling through Cyrodiil and we see a bunch of orcs and we're like, engage! And it turns out we can't engage because they're allies, you know? And the next thing we know, we got the wood elves knocking on our door going, why are you hitting our allies? And we're like, sorry, guys. Didn't know that you were allies with the enemy. That's kind of a big confusing fail. And screwed up.
You know, it makes me think of Darkfall. Have you ever played that game? It's like you have your races at first, and you have a certain race, and when you meet another, that's your enemy, so it's going to be red to you. The only thing that's going to change that is if you have guilds created, and the guild has certain races in it, then your kind of enemies change based on the guilds that are, you know, against each other. So maybe that's something they're thinking about doing.
That would be a cool concept if all the races started off like that. And then you created, you know, there wasn't this alliance war between the Altmeri Dominion, the Ebonheart Pack, and, you know, Daggerfall Covenant, okay? If it wasn't the three alliance wars with the three, because there's such a huge emphasis and backstory as to why these races are all aligned with each other. If there wasn't a story about that, and it just started off where you had these eight races just kind of, or nine races, pardon me, all just kind of grouped up together, you know, and it was just a pot of whatever, and you're like, hey, I'm going to play as a high elf, and, you know, all the high elves are good to me or whatever, they're my allies, and then you go off and you can join a guild, and, you know, like, you pretty much exactly what you're saying, Sophie. If they started off like that, that'd be great. But you start off in this alliance war,
What about faction-like territories, too? What if you're a high elf, and you decide that you're going to go play with the Daggerfall Covenant today? Okay. Well, you betrayed the Altmeri Dominion, so does that mean that you still have access to Somerset Isle and the other zones that are part of the High Elf faction territory? Does that mean you can go to the Daggerfall Covenant territory?
Well, what if I want to experience all the content? Do I just jump from faction to faction to faction with one character? If I'm just like, hey, I want to play on every single piece of continent or whatever with my High Elf, can I join Altmeri Dominion when I start off and then go to Daggerfall Covenant and then go over to the Ebonheart Pack and then go back to Altmeri Dominion? I mean, to me, it just seems a bit ridiculous, and I really hope that this is kind of something that we're, you know, not wrong. I hope we're wrong about all of this, but I just hope that this isn't what's happening, because that would be that'd be a big no-no.
Do you think one reason they're doing that is because they want to really make the game political when it comes to the RVR endgame?
They want
like EVE Online politics.
That's the first thing I thought of, like, when we started kind of, like, really getting depth there. Like, I'm like, are they trying to promote, like, espionage and spying and, like, all this stuff? I mean, it's a little out there, but, I mean, why not? I mean, you know, you basically got this, you know, political struggle between these three factions and power and yada, 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 realm, you know, yada, yada. Like, why not? I mean,
how's
totally
it
going to
work
that.
Then?
But at that point, nobody's going to trust anybody from a different faction.
Yeah, exactly.
Though. I mean, if first of all, ruling out the whole high elf thing for Legion, if an orc came knocking at my door and he's like, hey, can I get into your guild? I'd be like, I don't know why he's got that accent, but if he came asking, I'd be like, no. You're a green, giant, muscular-looking guy that's from a completely different faction. This doesn't sound suspicious at all. No. I don't see it working. It's a cool concept. Again, if it was the Darkfall concept, like Sophie was saying, I mean, I guess you could see that working.
Yeah. I just totally recant what I just said, because how is that even going to work? Some Argonian comes into the Altmeri Dominion, hey guys, can I play with you? And let's say, you know, Ryan, it is the espionage thing. Well, who the hell is going to trust an Argonian player, like, if you're Altmeri Dominion? Like,
what if he has a costume on?
Like, what are you going to do? Yeah, is that Argonian player going to be, you know, running around with the Altmeri Dominion, fighting with them, and he's going to be relaying his information back to his guild leader on Mumble or Ventrilo? Hey, we're going to this keep. Try to cut us off.
I mean, I guess there's nothing to stop people from doing that anyways, you know, by creating a new character. But, I mean, there's not as many people that are going to go for the effort to do that. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not going to be as is likely to see that happen. So, I don't know. I just...
What does this
mean? I hope
mean?
This isn't the case.
What does this mean?
I don't know.
Crazy. Craziness. All right, guys and gals. It's a short episode tonight. It's good, though. It's good, Ryan. Thrilled to have you on the show, buddy. Tell the audience where they could follow you on Twitter.
You could follow me at Ryan_B1313.
Nice. Also, guys and gals, keep an eye on trollscroll.com. He comes out with editorials. Sophie Brecka, fill us in. Where are you at?
You can follow me on Twitter at EaderBrecka, EaderBrecka. Same thing for Facebook. And you can find me, Sophie Brecka, on YouTube.
And last but certainly not least, Tamela Perrier.
I'm on Twitter as well, at La_French_guy. And I do stuff around Troll Scroll.
Yeah, tell them about our guild. Tell them about the Legion.
The Legion. Legion, if you go to trollscroll.com, go up to the top right-hand corner, click on the Legion tab. You can go on over to this nice window page that'll take you to our guild website at legionhq.engine, ENJIN.com, and you can check out our guild. It is a high elf only guild, so that means we do not accept Khajiit or wood elves. High elf only.
What if my dad was just a high elf? But my mom.
No. Was a Khajiit?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be kind of
gnarly.
Weird.
Don't judge me, pal.
I'm
that explains the beard. That explains all that extra
hair. That would make you a wood elf, right?
Wait, did you shave your beard, Ryan?
I did.
Did you?
Oh,
yeah.
Well, never mind.
I wouldn't make
tired
you a wood
of
elf.
The you know, Wolfman Jack comments. It wasn't
right,
a lot
back
of control,
to Legion. Back to Legion. Back to Legion. Let's. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Good deal.
Now I lost my train of thought. But yeah, you can check out our guild and see what we're all about. And if you're interested and you're a high elf playing on the Altmeri Dominion, you can send in an application and we would be most happy.
Yeah. Make sure if you're applying to the guild, click on recruitment and follow the instructions.
Right. Okay. That's another thing too. You have to register to Engine as well. You have to sign up. If you have an Engine account, you have to register your Engine account with our website. And if you don't, you have to register a new account. The recruitment form can only be seen if you have an Engine account, because you can't post unless you have an account, because otherwise the website doesn't know who's posting. So you have to make an account first.
Yeah. Follow Trollscroll on Twitter at RealTrollScroll. Visit trollscroll.com for all the news you need to know about the Elder Scrolls Online, videos, editorials, and of course, our podcast. Guys and gals, have a very, very, very pleasant weekend. Cheerio.
See you later.
Bye, guys.